listening to the official UEFA Women's Euro 2017 podcast.
And then there were four. Welcome to this preview podcast ahead of the semi-finals of UEFA Women's Euro 2017. I'm Chris Parrott in Enschede, and alongside me is UEFA.com journalist Paul Saffer. As always, you'll hear from the likes of Jodie Taylor and Vivian Miedema in this episode. And we'll talk France as well and their quarter-final hoodoo after they exited the tournament early yet again. Paul, it has all come down to this though. Denmark against Austria in Breda, and the Netherlands against England just down the road from us here in Enschede. What do you make to this surprising last four lineup?
Well, surprise is the word. We've had podcasts before and I wasn't even close predicting a Denmark-Austria quarter-final. Semi-final even. They played in July just before this tournament. Austria won 4-2. You did not think that was a rehearsal for the semi-final. Austria, that was their first win against any of the other 15 teams in this competition since March 2014. England, Netherlands, maybe a little bit more predictable, but still, no Germany, no France, no Norway, no Sweden. That's pretty unusual for a Women's Euro semi-final.
Follow UEFA Women's Euro 2017 on UEFA.com.
So first up, at 6 p.m. local time on Thursday, it's Denmark against Austria. And as you mentioned, Paul, not too many people predicted either of those would be here, let alone both of them playing each other. Here's how they did it.
Eventually in Rotterdam, we are underway. Bisgoski. A port away, but poured into the goal by Petersen. It's the perfect start for Germany. Assistant has waved, referee has said play on. They're level. Nadia Nadim with the equalising goal. Torgersen. Free header. Denmark in front. Theresa Nielsen has turned it around.
Well, there has already been one massive shock in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Women's Euro 2017. Can Austria provide another one here? And we are going to penalties. Sylvia Meziguet. And it's saved! Puntigam can make history here. And she does! The Austrian fairy tale continues.
Austria on their final tournament debut, remember. Penalty queens against Spain, but let's start with Denmark. Finally, somebody beat Germany in this tournament. It was a heck of a result for Denmark.
It was. It was, of course, a game postponed from the previous night because of the torrential rain they'd had in Rotterdam. They played the next day, and Germany scored almost straight away. It was a rare mistake from Stina Pittersen, the Denmark goalkeeper, and it got to 1-0 still at half-time. You thought Germany might add another goal. There's still no way of telling what was going to happen. Denmark thoroughly outplayed Germany in the second half. Nadia Nadim, the real inspiration behind it. And they thoroughly deserved to come back and win 2-1. The first time Germany had lost a knockout game in this competition since leading the third place match to Denmark in 1993.
I mean, that is extraordinary. We're now in 2017. Let's try and put this into perspective, because Germany chasing a seventh straight title, of course. They simply don't lose in this competition, do they?
They've been champions for 22 years, or if you want to be precise, 8,162 days. That's way longer than anyone's held, certainly any of UEFA's titles, or pretty much any title anywhere in football you care to mention. There were six straight wins in that. Lots of challenges came. A very strong Italian team, first of all, and then the great Sweden team in the first half of the last decade. Norway teams challenging them, but they saw everybody off. And although people knew they were in transition, lots of players retired, Sylvia Nied, the coach, retired off, they won the Olympics for the first time last year. Steffi Jones came in. Nobody quite predicted what would have happened. And as you say, it was the first time they'd lost the game in the knockouts for 24 years. Only the third loss over 90 minutes in a UEFA Women's Euro. And Since the first title was won in 1984 by Sweden, 27th of May 1984, that was 12,117 days before Germany played Denmark. Germany have been champions for 9,624 of those days. That's 79.4% of the time. So for basically for 80% of the time since Women's Euro started, Germany have been champions. That's how huge them not being champions is. And with Sweden also going out, and Norway also going out, we're definitely going to have the fourth different champions.
It is extraordinary. And I think it says an awful lot about Denmark, because a lot of the press and the publicity has been, wow, Germany's reign is over. But this Denmark team, having been behind, you could see the way Nadia Nadim wanted that header. It almost felt like Denmark wanted it more than Germany. And I guess that might have been keen, as well as how well they played, and particularly their captain, Pernille Harder. When she takes a game by the scruff of the neck, she's arguably one of the best players in this tournament.
And Germany know all about her, of course, because she plays for Wolfsburg alongside quite a lot of the Germany team. Nadia Nadim plays over in the United States, but she's been a key player for Denmark for a good decade, actually. She came through as a teenager. Everyone knows her backstory now. Coming from Afghanistan, she broke through very early, and she's been a stalwart, really, of the Danish team in between. She's had a few injuries in between, and I think she's really moved up a gear, actually, since she's moved to the American League, actually. I think that has really helped her and really, really given her an extra confidence to her play as well. And you see her leadership on the pitch for Denmark against Germany. Once that second half, the longer it went on, the more they believed they were going to win, and the more fearful Germany were, really. Steffi Jones said that she couldn't, you know, they've all said they're all a bit surprised by what happened. The German mentality went in that second half. They've had trouble in the past. The last two quarterfinals against Italy, Italy have taken them all the way. Norway, of course, had two penalties against them in the last final. There's been lots of games where Germany could have lost, but they've always found a way to win. Until now.
Yeah, you mentioned Nadia Nadim there. I've been lucky enough to be in the Denmark camp quite a lot over the last 3 weeks, and she is the most bubbly character you can ever meet. She's absolutely loving it, and you could really see her leading from the front in that second half. Quite a tale for Denmark, but Austria overcame Spain on penalties, and what a story this is. They have lit this tournament up on and off the pitch. Well, that's them dancing through the mix zone, which is where the media interviews take place after a full-time whistle, with a disco ball. I mean, they really are loving life in the Netherlands. And you get the sense the fact they're having so much fun is pretty key to also the way they play. That they're very much no fear, we're here, and this is a chance of a lifetime.
There is, they haven't been behind yet in the competition. They've not fluked their way through. They beat Switzerland in the first game, which was a big surprise. Switzerland were the team actually expected to be the dark horses, if you can be expected to be a dark horse, but they were like the newcomers who people thought might make the biggest impact. They beat them in the first game. They drew with France, were pretty unlucky not to win that game. They easily beat Iceland that last game 3-0. Iceland were already out. Austria outplayed them. And now to take out a very technically gifted Spain team as well. Nobody saw this coming from Austria whatsoever. I mean, they did well to qualify. They got to the playoffs in 2013, but even so, normally for one, they got to the final. They thought that would be fine, but they're in a group where they're the outsiders. Okay, Nina Berger's a good player. They've got a few players in the Frauen Bundesliga, but they didn't, on paper, stand a chance in Group C. But here they are in the last four, the first time since the Netherlands in 2009. A debutant's made it that far.
It's amazing. I think 1 million people watched their quarterfinal win, which, you remember, this is a country who hadn't won a Euro game, men's or women's. So this is huge news for Austrian football.
And in fact, you can actually see the figures. I think there were about 600,000 people watching early on, then 1.2 million by the time the shootout. So people were latching on to what was going on, and it was... Yeah, that is a huge viewing figures in Austria. It's big news. You had people like David Alaba and the president of Austria himself all giving their congratulations as the run's gone on. It really is huge news there. It's one of their big sporting achievements of recent years.
Make no mistake about it, in terms of the way Austria see this, this is the biggest football match that the country has ever played in, men or women. But where is this semi-final going to be won and lost? Well, let's hear from Denmark's Theresa Nielsen.
Patience. Austria will probably start with a defensive approach, so we need to figure out how we can open up their defence, and then we can take our chances, because I don't think we will get a lot of them. Efficiency and sharpness in both penalty areas would take us to the final.
Okay, some top stats for this game. Denmark, Paul, appearing in their sixth UEFA Women's Euro semi-final. They've never won one. They've never reached the final. Austria haven't been behind so far in a match during this final tournament. So what do you think is going to happen? Where's this game going to end up? Who's going to go through to the showpiece?
What Denmark do have that maybe some of the teams like France, they've surprised, and Spain haven't had, is that Denmark do have some players up front who have been in decent form, like Harder's had a good tournament, Teresa Nielsen, who we've just heard from, she's been playing well in this tournament, of course Nadia Nadim, who we've already discussed. So there are Denmark players with confidence, which maybe the Spain team, remember they'd lost to England and Spain going into that quarter-final, so our favourites, but Austria are the team with a far better group stage form. Of course, they held a France team who we can say in the end, yet again, didn't perform in a women's Euro, and we'll be discussing that in a bit, why it's failed to happen for them yet again. But that's maybe what Austria have to deal with. They're playing a team in much better form than the other sides they faced so far.
I'm going to have to push you a prediction.
I think Denmark are going to do it 2-0.
For the latest news and interviews, head to UEFA.com.
So the second semi-final kicks off at 8:45 p.m. local time here in Enschede on Thursday. It is the holders, the Netherlands, against the new favourites, Paul, England. And it really should be a cracker, even if England are without two key players.
They are. It's the game's a sellout already, so it's going to be the record crowd for a women's game in the Netherlands. It previously set in the opening game about 21,000. There'll be more than there inside 20 stadium. And the good news for most of those fans is that not only are England without key midfielder Jill Scott due to suspension, she got a second booking of the tournament against France, but Karen Barnsley, the first choice England goalkeeper, is out. She broke her tibia against France, played on for quite a few minutes with it, but she's going to be replaced by Siobhan Chamberlain, who does have some experience. She actually took over from her also in the quarterfinal of the World Cup against Canada when England went through then as well. So she's got experience doing that, unlike in Canada. Karen Barnsley won't be coming back for the semi-final, which they lost to Japan on that occasion. Siobhan Chamberlain will stay in goal on Thursday, and she's an experienced goalkeeper. I don't think there's actually a huge amount between the two goalkeepers. Maybe Karen Barnsley is a louder communicator. She's maybe got that going for her. But Siobhan Chamberlain, she played for England for much of last year while Barnsley was also injured, and she actually really came of age under Mark Sampson, the current England manager, when he was in charge of Bristol Academy. So I think she's fine to take over. With Jill Scott, there's quite a few options for England. They might bring in Karen Carney. She'll play wide and they'd move Jordan Nobbs into the middle. But I think England have got plenty of backups. Remember, England, by being able to rest most of their players, not only were they able to play Chamberlain actually in the third game against Portugal when they won 2-1, but they also changed 10 in the starting lineup, which means that, well, the Netherlands have had several players played every minute of this tournament, and there's 8 Netherlands players who've played more than the England player that's played the most minutes in this tournament, Millie Bright.
Yeah, which is a very good sign for Mark Sampson and his side. There are loads of subplots in this one. Lots of them because so many of the Dutch players play their club football in England. Lots of them with Arsenal as well. And I think the one that I really like, Paul, is the Netherlands goalkeeper Sari van Veenendaal is going to come up against Jody Taylor, who's England's star striker, but they're also teammates. And on the training pitch, they will have had shots and saves against each other for quite a long time. Taylor is, of course, the tournament's top scorer with 5 goals already.
Jody Taylor, once again, it's a real opportunity, and England are off to the perfect start. And it's Nobbs with the delivery, and the ball hooked towards goal, and eventually it's scrambled away. But it's only a temporary reprieve, and it's Jody Taylor once again. And the flick on will find Taylor. Is this the hat-trick? Yes, it is! But here is Jody Taylor. Can she seal it? Yes, she can! Now a chance. Jody Taylor with it! And England has the lead! The goal-scoring star of this tournament does it again! At just the right time.
We caught up with Jodie Taylor earlier this week, Paul, and unsurprisingly, she can't wait for the game.
it's going to be good. I actually bumped into Sari, a goalkeeper, yesterday. Just having a little bit of banter with her, which is cool. But that's it. We know the players quite well. They know our players quite well from playing in our league as well. So it should be an exciting game.
Just how good has she been then? Because it will take something remarkable for her not now to finish as the Adidas Golden Boot winner. She's been arguably the player of UEFA Women's Euro 2017.
Yeah, I mean, she's got 5 goals so far. The next best player is on 2. That's how far clear she is with 2 games remaining. A hat-trick against Scotland in the first game with the first Women's Euro hat-trick for 20 years. She then got crucial late goal against Spain and the winner against France. Both in games where England were having to do a lot of defending and games where she didn't have much of a chance. But in both games, she got that chance and she took it. And that's a sign of a player, and it's been the same when I've spoken to it. It's signed a player who's confident. We know some of our strikers can get in the zone without taking chances. There's been quite a few of the top strikers in this tournament who clearly haven't been in that zone, who maybe there's some doubts when they come, they're thinking about their shots. It's so natural for her at the moment, and that's why she's scoring so many goals. And it's come quite late for her. She's only 28 when she broke into the England team, because up until 2013 she wasn't favoured by the manager. She's had injuries. And I think she'd come close to quitting, even though she's had some good club spells. She's been a prolific scorer in England and in Sweden. But then Mark Sampson has turned to her. He's combined her with Frank Kirby, who was only a second division player when she was called up into the England team. And they've combined brilliantly in the past and in this tournament specifically. And it's an amazing story, Jodie Taylor. And she's not the only player. It's not been a one-woman show. There's been Jordan Nobbs in midfield, Frank Kirby up front with Taylor, of course, and players like Lucy Bronze in defence. But there's no doubt that Jodie Taylor's goal scoring has been fantastic, and that's something that Van Beemdael and the rest of the Dutch are going to have to stop if they've got any chance on Thursday.
We mentioned about other strikers who haven't hit the heights. Vivian Miedema was the great, you know, talisman for the Netherlands coming into it. She did get off the mark in their semi-final win against Sweden, and as ever, Lieke Martins was involved in the goal. How crucial she's been for the Netherlands. Miedema hopes that strike in the quarterfinals will be the start of a scoring run.
We're truly a team on the pitch. We play very close to each other. With all the supporters in the stadium and watching the game on TV, we are able to give more on the field. You really feel that. It's not just 60 or 70 minutes, but it's over 90 minutes. That's the strength of our team.
How good have the Netherlands been then? I mentioned Martins, and we heard from Miedema there. They are the host, but they seem to have played without pressure, and certainly they've imposed the Dutch way of playing on this tournament and their opponents so far.
I mean, it's worth remembering, in the group stage, there was no guarantee they were going to get out of that group. They had Norway, who had runners up last time, many people's favourites. I know they end up losing their 3 games without scoring, but nobody thought Norway would do that. And they had Denmark there, who've proved how good they are by getting to the semi-finals, and Belgium also impressed. So that was not an easy group. They got out of that with 3 wins. And then they took on Sweden in the quarterfinals. I think Sweden were probably slight favourites to win that game. And Netherlands outplayed and thoroughly deserved to win 2-0. They also had that brilliant wing play from Lieke Martins and also from Shanice van der Sanden of Liverpool, who, again, plays with some of the England team up there. And they were brilliant. And even though Miedema, until that quarterfinal, hadn't been struggling, I think she had more shots than anybody else in the tournament without getting her first goal. But then she did get it to sort of wrap up the win against Sweden. And their attacking players, brilliant. Danielle van der Donk in midfield is also worth highlighting as well.
So the Netherlands beat Sweden, as you mentioned. England knocked out France, who were many people's favourites ahead of the tournament, actually, but fell at the last 8 again. It's something about the favourites in this summer's UEFA Women's Euro 2017. They all seem to fall by the wayside. Well, I caught up with UEFA.com's France reporter, Emma Angon, who says problems up front were the reason for Les Bleus' early exit.
Well, against England, they couldn't score. They had some chances, but they just couldn't score, which was what happened in the first 3 games already. They did score, but it wasn't the goalkeeper's mistake, or was a bit lucky, to be fair. And against England, they just didn't have any ideas. They tried to go through the wings, to do long balls, to try on set pieces, which was the only way they scored in the first 3 games, but they just couldn't.
What's the reaction been back in France? Because this was a team of superstars. It was one of the pre-tournament favourites, yet they never really got going in this tournament, did they?
They didn't. And the reaction of the press and the supporters was sheer disappointment. we can see the quality of the players, the individual quality of the players, but it doesn't come through as a team. So there's disappointment, but also it's worrisome because it's been four tournaments that France goes out in the quarterfinal. And when you see the quality of the players and what they do with their clubs, with Lyon and PSG, even Montpellier, they should be doing better than that.
As ever, when a country goes out, fingers are pointed. Where, for this particular disappointment, is the blame seen? Is it the coach? Is it the players? What are the French press at least saying?
Well, there was some kind of outrage after the president of the French Federation said that he would keep Olivier Échouefny, the manager, at the head of the national team after this disappointment. Because they thought, like a lot of press, media and fans, they thought that France is playing even worse than they used to with Bergerot and Bini. I think the blame is a lot on the coach, which always will be, because when you see the quality of the players and no one manages to make them play well, then obviously it's going to be the coach that's to blame.
And where do you think France go from here? Because there's players who are retiring. It's going to be a slightly new-look squad. What do you think the future now holds for this particular France team?
Well, with Camille Abili retiring, and also I have to say that Olivier Échouefny wasn't that lucky, because he had Louis Anesib retiring just before he took the he went on at the head of the national team. So, those players were really important, and they're missed. Like Louis Anesib is really missed in the national team. Camille Abili will be missed. And it's going to be very difficult in the next 2 years as well, because we are hosting the World Cup in 2019. So it means that France is going to play only friendlies in the next 2 years. So there's going to be no competitive games with the national team. So you know how teams can arrive in that kind of competition after not playing competitive games. Already France has problems when they've played competitive games for 2 years to prepare a tournament, and they go out in the quarterfinal. So it's going to be tough. But I was quite happy with the new young girls that came through. I'm really rating Grace Guillerot. She had a good tournament, I thought, even though the whole team wasn't great. We need a striker. Would be nice to have a striker to be able to score goals. But in defense, we have good young girls. Like the game against England and even the four games in this tournament, we used a lot of under 22 players, which they're very young, so they will come through, and they've won titles with France, with the under 19, the under 17, so they know what it means to win titles with the national team, and that's why Échouefny brought them as well in the team. So hopefully it's a bright future for France.
Follow the tournament on Facebook at UEFA Women's Euro.
Thanks, Dermot, for coming on the podcast. Okay, Paul, here's my top stats ahead of the Netherlands against England. The Dutch have won all four of their matches, of course, as we've mentioned, and they've scored the opening goal in all four matches. They have yet to fall behind. England have won each of their last nine Euro 2017 matches, qualifying and finals, and they've conceded just one goal in that nine-match winning run. These are two semi-finalists absolutely bang in form.
They are, and obviously England have done the same, won all the games here without falling behind, and they're both playing excellently. You mentioned how the Netherlands have dealt with the pressure of being the home team, and England put pressure on themselves. They've actually welcomed putting the pressure on themselves, of believing themselves to be favourites from the start. They've always been talking about, this is the sixth game tournament for us. So they've been convinced they were going to get that far, and some of the ways Mark Sampson has talked before the games is he's almost deliberately tried to set himself up for a fall by saying, I believe we can beat Spain, I believe we're better than France, and each time his team keeps delivering for him. So they've both dealt with that pressure excellently. They've both won every single game. Something, of course, has got to give. I probably would go with England, they probably are a step up. I know Netherlands have beaten Norway and Sweden, but again, they weren't teams on top form. England team at the top of their game, and they've probably got just that little bit extra edge. I mean, 2009, they went to extra time when Jill Scott scored. Of course, she won't be playing. Unlike quite a few of the England players that day, she won't be playing because of her suspension. But I just have a feeling for England, particularly as they know about these semi-finals. They had one already in the World Cup. They've probably got this little bit more experience in this big occasion. That might just give them the edge.
So you have predicted an England-Denmark final, which we're recording this in Enschede. We best keep our voices down because you won't be a very popular man. But there we go. That is Paul's thoughts. And that's it for this podcast. We will be back ahead of the final, which is rapidly approaching this Sunday. A reminder, though, 6 p.m. Thursday local time, Austria against Denmark. And at 8:45, the Netherlands play England. You can follow both matches on UEFA.com. It's business time at UEFA Women's Euro 2017.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Women's Euro 2017 podcast.